I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.
This is
Make It Plain.
M.I.P.
with Masamela Mafumo.
Mark Thompson.
Make It Plain.
Get woke.
Ladies and gentlemen, as we all know, there has been a great deal of conversation in the run-up to Election Day in and around what the Biden-Harris administration has done in terms of delivering for African Americans economically, and particularly focused on African American men, on Black men. Obviously, all of us have room for improvement in terms of how we report that, how we share that information, especially against the proliferation of misinformation and disinformation on social media, which targets our communities more, the Black community, more than any other group of people, and that's by design. We have, thankfully, made some inroads in this conversation just in the past couple of weeks, vis-a-vis the help of the campaign. But we're not here today to talk particularly about the campaign. At least one of our guests really should not. So we won't hold him to that. But just by way of reporting, the campaign has done some of that. But to his credit, one of our very special guests reached out to me and said, hey, Reverend Mark, I want to talk about this and I want to share. We need to get this word out. And it's also important that more of us see him, because as we talk about the administration, as we talk about delivering for our community, the Black community, particularly for African-American men, we actually, how many of us actually know, he's not on television every day, how many of us actually know there's a brother who is a deputy secretary of the Treasury? Now, if you've been watching Make It Plain, you know that because he's been on with me several times. But ask some of your friends and family, do they know? And if they don't, have them join us live right now. We're across all of our platforms. And folks, feel free to make comments on whatever platform you're watching, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, and we'll share some questions with our guests. And so, as I alluded to, we're honored once again to have the Deputy Secretary of the United States Treasury Department here with us, our dear brother, Wale Adeyemo. Mr. Deputy Secretary Treasurer, Deputy Secretary Treasurer, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Reverend. Thank you so much for having us and give us an opportunity to talk about what we've done and how it can help the Black community. Because I think in addition to celebrating the work we've done to build an economy that works for everyone, including the Black community, there are real opportunities out there for Black people in America to not only get jobs, but build wealth due to the work that we've done. And I'm happy to be joined today by a real partner for the Treasury Department in that work, the president of one of the country's Black-owned banks, who has received resources from the Biden administration that he's using to help build wealth in the Black community. And I wanted to just have a conversation with people about what we've done, but also how we've enabled Black business leaders to be able to do more to build up our community.
Yeah, very, very important. The other special guests we have, folks, we're honored to have with us, the president of the Carver Financial Corporation, Robert E. James II. Mr. President James, how are you today?
Reverend Mark, I'm fantastic, and I'm really thrilled and honored to be able to join you today and to be able to have this conversation with the Deputy Secretary. If you might just permit me for a moment, I've been working with Deputy Secretary Adeyemo throughout the Biden-Harris administration, and I can testify not only to the administration's commitment to our institutions, Black-owned institutions, from the very beginning, but I can also testify to his personal commitment. He is the number two official in the United States Treasury Department, the most powerful Department of Treasury in the world. He has an incredible portfolio. I mean, he's you know, dealing with Russian sanctions against Russia, but he takes personal time and resources to make sure that the institutions that serve our community are well-funded and have resources to get back into the community. And I want that to be really clear because I've seen it up close and personal. And it's very important. He's a very humble guy. He doesn't seek out a lot of cameras. And the Treasury Secretary doesn't either. But the department has done so much to help Black-owned institutions grow in the last 4 years that it's just it's important to make sure that people like me who are on the front lines actually say that.
Well, gentlemen, let me just be the moderator. Let's start then expound on that. Deputy Secretary Adeyemo, talk to us about this partnership with Carver Financial that obviously you also share with other institutions, but talk to us about that and how that works and what that's doing for us economically.
Yeah, and I think that we have a strong history of Black-owned financial institutions in this country that have helped create a Black middle class that has thrived, that has built wealth in our community, but for too long, they've been under-resourced. And one of the things that the President and Vice President Harris were focused on was making sure that we got resources to this ecosystem of financial institutions, and we provided $1.4 billion of capital to Black-owned banks in this country, which is the largest amount of money from the federal government into this ecosystem in history. And what it was meant to do was to enable these Black-owned banks to do exactly what Robert has been doing, which is investing in our communities and giving Black entrepreneurs the ability to get the loans they need to build their small businesses, helping to build affordable housing, helping to make sure that in our communities, you not only have the opportunity to get a job, but you have the ability to build wealth because you have a financial institution that's going to provide you with the financial tools to do that. And this is one of the many things we've done to try and build out an ecosystem of economic opportunity for Black Americans.
President James, talk to us about how you've been able to do some of the things the Deputy Secretary has mentioned, and folks, you know, Carver, I live in New York, so I'm familiar with the bank here. I asked the president if he's in New York. He's actually at Carver Financial, which is in Georgia, because if he was in New York, you know, I was going to obviously talk to him about what I'm rocking right now because we home tonight. But talk to us about what you've been able to do with Carver Financial when it comes to economic opportunities.
Sure. Just very quickly. So Carver Financial Corporation is a bank holding company, and we own two of the 23 Black-owned banks in the United States. We own Carver State Bank, which is the bank that's headquartered in Savannah, Georgia, my hometown, as well as Alamerica Bank, which is headquartered in Birmingham, Alabama, which we acquired in 2022. We are the only Black-owned multi-bank holding company in the U.S. Our institution is a proud member of the CDFI program, or the Community Development Financial Institution program. We've been a part of that program for over 20 years. That's a program that sits up under Secretary Adeyemo's leadership at the Treasury Department. And because we are a CDFI, on an annual basis, we certify to Treasury that we have a primary mission to serve an underserved targeted market, which in our case is African Americans in the state of Georgia. We provide a minimum of 60% of our lending to that community each year. We have a board that is accountable to that community, and we have development services or technical assistance in that community. Our institution has grown by more than double since 2020. So when we started out, in the pandemic, we were right around $50 million in total assets. We're now over $100 million in total assets. I also have the privilege of having just served 4 years in a term as chairman of the National Bankers Association, which is the organization that represents minority depository institutions across the country. And what I can report there is that minority depository institutions and Black-owned banks in particular had historic growth in the last 4 years. Asset size among Black-owned institutions increased over 75% in the last 4 years. When the Deputy Secretary says that they made the largest investment in history in Black-owned banks, that is absolutely true. For the first time in history since Reconstruction, we had an economic convulsion. The COVID-19 pandemic was an economic convulsion. We saw that in our communities. Typically, during an economic convulsion like that, you would lose half the Black-owned banks. So in the financial crisis in 2008, 2009, over half the Black-owned banks failed. In this situation, we've actually seen a slight increase. At the start of the administration, there were only 18 Black-owned banks. Now there's 23. People are starting new banks. People are buying banks. And part of that is because of the work that the Biden-Harris administration have done to bring attention to our sector and attract capital. So we're putting that capital on the street every day. So we've more than doubled our size. We were able to buy and help to resurrect another Black-owned institution that was on the brink of failure, the bank in Birmingham, Alamerica. We've been able to increase our lending. We're making larger and bigger loans to minority-owned small businesses across the state of Georgia and now into Alabama. And that is a testament to this new capital that we've been able to attract. And that capital has been deployed by the Biden-Harris administration.
Now, when we apply that capital, gentlemen, how does that translate on the ground? In addition, obviously, to banks, in turn, are those banks able to make loans to Black small businesses that create jobs?
Yeah,
I should say Black jobs, as someone else calls them, but please, yeah.
They definitely are. And I think it'd be great to hear from Robert about some of the things that he's done. One of the projects that I appreciate most that you've lent to is the $650,000 of working capital to an affordable housing project in Atlanta that is being built by a Black-owned housing developer, which yes. is not only creating Black jobs, but also helping to create Black wealth, because that developer is going to be able to generate more than just a small amount of money from building this project. And by doing the project, they can do bigger projects in the future. So it'd be great to hear from you in terms of some of the ways in which you are giving people the money they need to invest in their dreams.
That's a great example, Deputy Secretary Adeyemo. So Urban Oasis is the name of that company. Two brothers here in Atlanta. I live in Atlanta. Two brothers here in Atlanta who have built they started off just buying individual homes and investing in them after the financial crisis and housing prices were so depressed in the Black neighborhoods. They started out just buying homes, renovating them, reselling them. They've now built a really impressive development company, and they're doing single family, they're doing multifamily. They've now been made a part of a big team that is doing a redevelopment on the Beltline in Atlanta, which is a big economic development engine that's happening in Atlanta. It's also driving gentrification. So it's really important that we have Black-owned companies that are trying to keep housing affordable for people to continue to live in those communities. So Urban Oasis came to us and they needed working capital. We were able to make $650,000 worth of working capital available to them to keep their employees going, to keep their office going while they were trying to amass capital to build new homes. The deputy secretary got a chance to meet one of their principals. He came to Atlanta a few months ago and we had a very quiet meeting. We put together three or four of our bank customers, a local restaurateur Blue Seafood House. We put together Urban Oasis, a couple of other our customers who are doing all kinds of things just here in Atlanta. Another example of the work that we've been able to do with these resources, Reverend, is Raylo Clothing. That's a small business that sits in Savannah, Georgia, our hometown. A brother who has a clothing store. We were able to make a loan to him to help him not only get new inventory and hire more people, but actually buy the building. So he now owns the building instead of renting. These are the kinds of loans that we're able to do now with, again, that increased bandwidth that's been provided through these programs that we work with the Treasury Department on, but also now this increased capacity so that we can make bigger and more loans.
And the reality is that there are banks like this all over the country that have got money from us. A great example for me is M&F Bank that's given $6.5 million to Shaw University in North Carolina, an HBCU, that's using that money to be able to finance getting Black young people the education they need. So Robert has great stories because he runs a great financial institution, but there are a number of other institutions throughout the country that are open to lending to Black small businesses.
And obviously, again, when that lending happens, that creates those Black jobs. And in fact, Deputy Secretary, the Biden administration took Black unemployment to an historic low, despite the claim that was made by the predecessor administration. They're still saying that to this day. But that has actually happened under the Biden administration, has it not?
Very true. We've also seen Black small business ownership double under the Biden administration, which is equally important because in addition to getting a job, we want to create Black wealth also.
And so, folks, just for the record, 2023, that was the lowest year for Black unemployment on record. And for our lifetimes, Black unemployment was always, no matter what, twice white unemployment. And for quite some time now, for a number of months, even that is no longer the case. We've cut into that. It's still not equal, but it's not double either anymore, is it, Mr. Secretary?
You're absolutely correct. And I think another thing that's been important is we've seen Black labor force participation rates be at historic levels, which means more Black Americans are working today than at any point in our history as well, because of the economic opportunities that have been created by this administration.
16 million jobs, including 2.4 million jobs for African-American workers. For some reason, Black women and Black women-owned small businesses took a great deal of the hit, to borrow your term, President James, a convulsion during the pandemic. But now, prime-age Black women have seen their labor force participation rates climb about 3%. And if I'm not mistaken, Black women small businesses are back on the rise. Is that accurate?
Very true. And that is because of the work we've done, but because of just the grit and determination of Black people throughout the economy to be entrepreneurs. And now they have an opportunity to have financial institutions like the one that Robert runs that will help invest in their dreams. Because I recently did an event with a senator in Virginia, Warner, where a Black woman who was running a daycare center talked about having gone to 7 different banks to try and get a loan to expand her daycare center. It wasn't until she went to a community development financial institution that got money from the Treasury Department that she was able to get that loan to expand her daycare center. And that daycare center didn't only create jobs, it also helped these parents in her community be able to go to their jobs. So in addition to the work she was creating real economic opportunity for the entire community. And that's exactly what Black-owned banks and CDFIs are doing throughout the country. And now, because of the efforts of the president and the vice president, they have the resources to step up their lending and step up their investment in our community and in the dreams and hopes of the people who are opening small businesses.
Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the Reproductive Rights Amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.
Black business ownership is up 6.2 percentage points to 11%. That's also the highest rate in history since 2019.
Yes.
Now, folks, this is interesting. A lot of us don't know this. In 2021, Black-owned companies employed 1.4 million people and paid over $50 billion in annual payroll. You know, a lot of times we hear about how bad we're doing, President Carver, but a lot of us don't know that 1.5 million of us practically work for a Black-owned business.
You know, I think that's a really important point to make. Reverend, I'm astounded by the ingenuity of our people. And because we have increased scale and the ability to make bigger loans, we're seeing many more Black businesses that are bigger scale. We're getting customers coming in now who are, you know, real estate developers, like I mentioned, who are building affordable housing, but we're also getting people come in who say, you know, we're going to go and buy some companies. We're going to go and buy a company and create a Black-owned company. And that's the kind of business that is going to really, really help create wealth. At Carver, we've been around since 1927, so almost 100 years. And our bank has been Black-owned. It was founded by a Black man in Georgia who was the first African-American to have a commercial real estate license. And when he founded the bank, what he was really doing was trying to aggregate capital, create what we would now call affordable housing in segregated Savannah, Georgia. And we've been able to grow into our mission, which is to provide the building blocks of financial freedom. We think there's four building blocks: to build businesses, build homes, build money, and build community. And the first building block is to build businesses. And that's where most wealth is created. We think about home ownership, and that's critical. But the most wealth is created when people own a business. That's how you move your generation, how you move a generation from one place to another, is to own a business, create exponential wealth creation, and then create jobs that you can bring back to your community. And that's where we're focusing. And again, I can't say it enough, this additional resources that we're getting from Treasury is helping us do that. Another quick point I just want to make is that the resources that we're getting from the Treasury Department are not episodic. They're permanent resources. And so in banking, this permanent resource that we have received out of the Treasury Department, that $1.8 billion that the Deputy Secretary mentioned earlier, our banks over time will be able to leverage and grow 10 times from that $1.8 billion. So that $1.8 billion is a historic amount of investment. But through getting new deposits, we'll be able to actually grow $18 billion in terms of total size, which means that that's more impact we can have in the community as Black-owned banks.
President James, you just said something, because most of us define wealth in terms of home ownership. But as we're talking, and as you have mentioned, even in some of the work you do, you're trying to address and help businesses where you are address affordable housing, even build affordable housing. We know how scarce that is. So maybe more of us should be focused on building businesses to get that wealth on the front end. That's my takeaway from what you just said.
Yes, sir. Let me tell you just from what I see on the ground, where I see new opportunity. Housing, we already talked about that. Healthcare, I'm seeing entrepreneurs who are coming to us looking for dollars to acquire or expand healthcare practices.
Mm-hmm.
Another huge opportunity is in green lending, climate-friendly lending. We have a number of initiatives that are going on to help reduce greenhouse gas emissions and to help reverse climate change, which, as we know, the impact hits our communities the most. There's going to be so many opportunities for our businesses and our people to lean into, whether it's distributed solar in residential neighborhoods, but also all of our churches, all of our places where we have real estate. What if we think about putting solar on those roofs and reducing the energy cost of maintaining these church congregations and church edifices? Where are the EV charging stations going to go? If you're an electrician, can you start thinking about learning how to become the installer of the EV charging station, the person who repairs it? Those are the kinds of opportunities that we're looking for and that we're looking to help people either start a business or take their small electrician shop and become a bigger business, doing that kind of work that's going to be critical for all communities, not just our community.
So folks, he's given us some areas. We ought to put those to the test and use our creativity, housing, healthcare, and climate. We should also mention, Mr. Deputy Secretary, we have the number of Black workers that were self-employed, another measure of entrepreneurship. You are an entrepreneur if you're doing that. Increased by over 30% under the Biden-Harris administration. Is that a benchmark? Have we seen that increase in self-employment?
Never seen that in history. And I think one of the things the vice president's been focused on particularly is how do we take these resources that we've been talking about here and get it into the hands of people? Because it's great to hear about them. But the thing is that people want to know is how can I get access to these things? Because that self-employed person or the person who has a side hustle, how do I turn that into a small business is a question they should all be asking themselves. And what the vice president did over the summer was she launched an economic opportunity tour where she went to various cities and brought all of us alongside to talk to people about how they could get these resources. Well, we're doing that virtually now, and we've created a toolkit where, for example, in a state like New York, we have 55 different programs the federal government offers that allows you to get access to capital, so money from banks like Carver, or access to customers. So who's going to buy the product that you're selling? The federal government could be a great customer. And then finally, access to people just to help you figure out the maze of things that it takes to start a small business. And part of our goal is to use these toolkits, which now are available at our website, treasury.gov, to help people get access to these resources in order to build the type of wealth that Robert was talking about. Because for many people in our community, they are entrepreneurs. They either have taken time away from working or in addition to their job, they're doing something on the side to make a little bit of income. Our goal is to make sure that we get you the tools you need to be able to use that side hustle, that small business, to build the kind of generational wealth that helps improve our entire communities. And that 1.4 million people who work for Black small businesses, they're not all Black. We all know that. So investing in the Black community, as we know well, is investing in the American economy and building our entire economy. That's why we're so focused on making sure that we make these resources available.
I may have missed it. Did you mention, too, in terms of the toolkit, does that include the SBA loans as well?
Yes, it does. It is a toolkit. The vice president's request for us was to make this a toolkit that included all the federal resources that a small business could use. So it's everything from lending from banks like Carver to the SBA tools to a number of other tools that the Treasury Department, the Department of Energy provides, and EPA. So if you are interested in finding resources to help you get access to capital, get access to customers, or get the technical assistance you need to be able to grow your business, these toolkits provide you with those types of solutions the federal government has. You can go to treasury.gov to find them.
Let's talk about wages. I know we don't have a lot of time left. Wages. This is a fact. Real wages for African Americans grew over 5% between 2019 and the four quarters ending in the third quarter of this year. Real wages grew. Now, some of the rappers are running around saying we were better off in the predecessor administration because we got that STEMI. But that STEMI was a one-shot thing. And ain't no more STEMI if it's not a pandemic. God forbid there's another pandemic. But wages are permanent, correct?
Yeah, they are. And I think it's important to point out what we mean by real wages. And that's money on top of inflation. So that means that you're making 5% more in money on top of inflation than you were before this happened. It is important for us to remember, if we were having this conversation on October 30th, 2020, we would only be able to do this by Zoom because we wouldn't have been able to meet in person. The economy at that point was in a stage of people were worried that we may be heading towards a depression. And now, instead of heading towards a depression, we have all-time lows in unemployment. We're seeing Black small businesses double. We're seeing Black labor force participation at historic highs, and we're seeing our income rise as well. There's a lot more we've got to do, but we've made a great deal of progress. And the key for us is to make sure that we have the ability to keep making this progress in partnerships with banks like Carver in order to grow the Black economy and make sure that our communities and our children have the opportunities that we want them to.
Black net worth is also up 60%. Again, for those who are being led to believe that we were doing better at some earlier time, this is the case today. Black net worth is up 60% between 2019 and 2022. And the Black-white wealth gap is at its narrowest level in nearly 20 years. These are great numbers.
They are, and that's a sign of progress. We started from a really low base, so I want to acknowledge that. And we've got a long way to go in terms of closing that wealth gap. But the only way we're going to do it is by investing in our communities. And part of that investment is investing in Black-owned banks.
Just a couple other points, and then we're going to go. Black home ownership rates increased. And we talked about this by 3.5 percentage points from 2019 through the four quarters ending in Q2 2024. In the years of the financial crisis, Black home ownership had dropped 1.75 percentage points. As of Q2 2024, the second quarter, 37% of homeowner assistance fund homeowners self-identified as Black. In 2021, eviction filing rates in Black neighborhoods were less than half their historic average. 41% of ERA payments have gone to Black families as of quarter one, 2024. And lastly, again, how we doing, what we have, what we don't have. Over 800,000 African-American children were lifted out of poverty in 2021 through the expansion of the child tax credit under the American Rescue Plan. Again, that's after the so-called STEMI. This helped to drive the child poverty rate for Black children to its lowest level on record. So these are things that the Biden-Harris administration has been able to accomplish, folks, in partnership with institutions, Black institutions, African-American institutions, in Georgia, no less, like Carver Financial Corporation. President James, your closing thoughts and recommendations.
Again, I want to thank you, Reverend Mark, for the opportunity. And it's always great to see the Deputy Secretary. I know how busy he is, so he's got a big portfolio. In closing, again, you know, through our banks, Carver State Bank, you know, you can find us at carverstatebank.com or Alamerica Bank, alamericabank.com, Birmingham and Savannah, Alabama and Georgia. We are providing the building blocks of financial freedom. We have had historic amounts of growth. We've been around almost 100 years, and we've more than doubled in the last 4 years. And I can just testify that it's because of the effort and the intentionality of the Biden-Harris administration. I participated in the first economic opportunity tour stop with Vice President Harris here in Atlanta. And literally today, I was communicating with a borrower, a potential borrower, a business owner who reached out to us because of that tour so that we can help him acquire a company. And this is real. This is happening. It's happening for our institution, and we're going to have continued ability to grow our institution and our impact because of the efforts of this administration. It's real and it's lasting. And I'm so grateful for the Deputy Secretary's intentionality, for the Vice President's intentionality, and for the entire administration putting this issue out front and making sure that we have resources that we can pour back into our community.
Deputy Secretary Adeyemo, and your closing thoughts, and in those thoughts, share with us, as a brother, what motivates you to get up every morning and do this hard work?
Yeah, and I want to thank President James for joining us, because he's got a lot of work to do, and he's investing in communities that truly matter. And I want to thank you, Reverend, for having us. The thing that motivates me to continue to do this work is where I'm from, and remembering that working class neighborhood that was mostly Black and Latino, and remembering how hard hit it was by the financial crisis when I was growing up, and how while people on Wall Street ultimately did okay, many of those families were still making their way back when the pandemic hit. And the reason I came back to Treasury and I'm doing this job is because I was devoted to ensuring that people who look like me, who are from communities like that, weren't only going to be able to make it back to where they started, but they were going to have an opportunity to build the kind of opportunity that would transform the lives of their children. That's why I'm so excited by investments in firms like Carver, where they are making investments in communities that are transforming the lives of people by helping them get houses, get access to the money they need to build businesses. And by doing all of that, helping to build an American economy that works for everyone. So it is, I love the work that I'm doing here because it gives me a chance to pour into the communities that look like the ones I came from. And I look forward to keeping doing that work, and appreciate you taking the time to have us on today.
Absolutely. It's an honor to have you folks. Carver Financial Corporation President Robert E. James II, our very special guest, and the Deputy Treasury Secretary, Wale Adeyemo. You know, anybody can print their name, their signature on a check, but there are people in that office that actually do the work and make that little red wagon go, whether or not their name is on a check. Folks get caught up in who was somebody's name was on a check. That's not what this is about. So folks, these are the facts. This is what's out there. These are the ways in which we have improved economically under the Biden-Harris administration. It is not partisan for me to say, vote. Tuesday's the big day. Get out and vote however you're going to vote. But vote with this kind of information, with this kind of resource, so you know what you're voting about, what you're voting for, and the issues involved in this. And we wanted to share these thoughts. And again, a lot of political officials and government officials you got to chase down. I must say, the Deputy Secretary chased me down and said, brother, I want to come on and talk about this. And we honor him. I'm honored that he did so, and we honor him for doing so. Again, gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us on Make It Plain.
We appreciate you.
Thanks for getting woke and listening to Make It Plain. As always, perform an act of kindness on behalf of an elder or young person. Write a letter to a sister or brother who just so happens to find her or himself incarcerated. Offer libations to the ancestors upon whose sturdy shoulders we all now stand. And above all, give thanks to the God of your understanding by whatever name you call her and him. All God asks of us is that we give each other love. Thanks for giving MIP love. And please remember to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. If all hearts and minds are clear, it has been made plain.